It seems the least I can do.
Karen got up, and the awkward silence that had preceded the blowjob resumed. She didn't answer, and got a small, disappointing jar of Nescafe out of the cupboard. At least she wasn't crying. That had to be a good sign, Tam thought to himself. Fuck it. He felt physically better than he had in ages. She had swallowed every bit of tension in his body. He walked over to her as she busied herself with the kettle, put his arms around her from behind, and kissed her neck. His knees still felt a bit weak, but even he could work out that she might not be feeling quite as satisfied as him yet. Her body language seemed off, one arm making the drinks, the other clamping her bobbly cardigan around her body, which suddenly he realized he would quite like to see. She turned round, holding his coffee, which he accepted, and he took a deep slug.
Right. Your turn.
He led her, both arms crossed across her middle now, to the bed, gently put her arms down by her sides, stood her in front of him, and sat down. He took off the cardigan and undid her blouse. She had been right the first time he saw her. She had beautiful breasts, with big, firm, pink nipples. He could tell she hated the scrutiny. She couldn't meet his eyes, but it had been a long time since he had seen a naked woman, and he swallowed hard before taking off her jeans. His invisible neighbour had been hiding her light under a polyester bushel, and he leant forward and took her nipple gently between his teeth, pulling her towards him. This time they took it slowly, and although they still hadn't said more than 4 sentences to each other, their bodies didn't seem to mind. They fitted. He found himself thinking of those salad sets where the vinegar and the olive oil slide together to make a perfect whole. His size matched hers, and his mouth fitted all parts of her, and she was tight around him. And when he woke up early the next morning, she was asleep on his chest, something that he had hated all his life, but which for some reason now seemed perfectly natural. Tam felt wide awake, and had an overwhelming desire to spring clean. Karen's flat might be bare, but his, he thought, was a pigsty. He crept out of bed, grinning to himself, and pulled the duvet up over Karen's shoulders. She didn't stir. There was a pen and a pad by the computer, and he wrote, "Thanks, Tam." Then screwed it up and wrote, "See you later." Then screwed that up too and wrote, "Thanks for the coffee. See you, Tam." That would get over the awkwardness of her not knowing his name. He had noticed that even when she was coming, she hadn't a clue what he was called, or he was pretty sure she would have shouted it. He grinned to himself again, picked up the 2 rubbish bags by her door, and headed quietly downstairs. The fresh air hit him like a bucket of iced water, and his deck shoes left his ankles vulnerable. He ran, bag in each hand, towards the bins. There was not a trace of the broken whiskey bottle from the night before, or the takeaway containers. Even the patches of oil that had helped him fall ass over tip last night were gone. Maybe they did have a house elf after all. It was mesmerizingly clean, not a sliver of glass on the path, and it looked as if someone had wiped the bins down and straightened them up. Tam opened the lid. The bags that he had thrown around the evening before in his search for booze had been repacked, at angles of 90 degrees to each other, and right on top was the translucent white one, which he vaguely remembered seeing as he dug for his takeaway bag. If he had still been a copper, he would have sworn that the T-shirt he could now see inside was splattered with blood. Old habits died hard, and he picked the bag up carefully, tucked it under his jacket, and headed back inside to the flat. His nose could smell something off, and his nose was never wrong. Chapter 5 Nick. I read that when cats are cuddling and needing you, and you think it's cute, they're really just checking your vitals for weak spots. Candice McClure. Friday morning. I was pleased when I woke up at 6:30 in the morning. It's a good time to wake up. It's quiet on Staverton Road then. Birds tweeting and the sound of distant engines are the only noises you can hear. Well, apart from my own breath, which I try not to concentrate on. In and out. It seemed loud to me, and I was worried I was getting a chest infection. There are germs everywhere. I quickly googled signs of chest infection and counted. I only had two of the symptoms on the list. I had agreed with Mother that I was not allowed to panic if I had less than three on a list of symptoms for any illness. Mother had explained it. The reason was that most illnesses had similar symptoms, and I could misunderstand and get really worried and think I was ill when really I wasn't. Even thinking about it made me start to think I might have symptoms I didn't have, like itchiness or excessive need to urinate. Keeping calm was very important, or stress might follow, which caused so many symptoms you could hardly list them. Shortness of breath was one effect of stress, and it was scary, as it could also indicate a heart attack. The thought of my heart made me feel like scratching my legs. I started to worry that my position in bed might be making my heart pump harder than it should have to, and that might be putting a strain on it right now. I'd spent hours looking at films on the computer of operations where the surgeons opened someone's chest and worked on a shiny, slimy heart that had been stopped by a machine before they connected it back up, or sometimes put in a new one from someone else, and it pulsated rhythmically. It all looked a bit hit and miss. The fact that the whole of my existence was reliant on that one muscle in my chest that could realistically pack up at any time made me nervous. People could be really fit and eat only healthy food and still have congenital heart problems and drop dead. I wish things were a bit more secure, health-wise. There is almost nothing you can do to stop your body getting ill or responding to situations in a way you might not like. It's like being a servant to a master who is completely unpredictable. That's why I had a routine, so I was busy and my mind was occupied. I did my breathing exercises and thought about the kitten, but that didn't calm me down. I wondered whether cats could have heart problems too. That would be another thing to worry about. Last night I made my Thursday phone call to my mother, and all she wanted to talk about was me getting a cat. Again. I decided that, even though I didn't find them very interesting, if everyone thought I should have one, I would try. Mother kept using words like company and responsibility, and I didn't want either of those things. But it was better than a person. It was just a baby animal. I would try. It wasn't Wednesday, but Grandpa was coming around specially to deliver my new cat. It was a tabby one. Mother told me that she was coming with him, so I had spent yesterday's session on the computer searching and had put together a document on how to care for a kitten and printed lots of pages. Kittens needed a lot of looking after, and I was feeling very unsure how I would fit it in and keep to my list. I had gathered up all the information and emailed Mother a list of things I needed to get and things that had been recommended by www.catprotection.co.uk. There were a lot of things, and I knew that having a cat was going to be hard, even though Grandpa thought it was for my own good and was only getting it to make me more responsible in the eyes of the world, which was very important, even though I didn't understand how they would see that I had a cat, because it wasn't going outside, and I didn't have visitors unless you count Grandpa and Mother, and they already know. I would have to do a whole new list on the kitchen wall, and I would have a whole new set of things to do. It was making my palms itchy, and I felt sweaty and upset. My routine was just right, and I could fit everything in. But just when things had settled down, now there was the afternoon in the park, which I hated thinking about and couldn't visit any more, and this. I had discovered that cats need worming and microchipping and got stressed. But this one was going to come with those things done. And injections. I hated injections, so I didn't want to see that. Grooming the cat wasn't necessary unless you got one which had long hair. I had already told Grandpa to make sure it had short hair. Grandpa had selected a tabby cat, just a normal one, so no grooming and no hair on the sofa, just maybe a few hairs that fell out like they do with a person. I didn't want to have clothes covered in hair. I remembered I had also put a note on the board downstairs asking for work. I could feel my face screwing up, and my hands, and I leant hard against the wall on my tiptoes. On top of all this, Grandpa had told me on the phone that the kitten was going to urinate and defecate in a plastic tray that he was bringing with him. I had to scoop it out. It would come with a scoop, and then put it in the bathroom and flush it away in the toilet I use myself. The thought of it made me feel like vomiting. I read an article which said a cat is cleaner than a person, but that might be the people you see on the tube, who don't wash or sanitize. More and more I decided I wasn't looking forward to the cat. It was all adding tasks, and the cat hadn't even arrived yet. The issue of what to call my cat had also thrown me. I had to name it, Mother said, because it was going to be mine. I first wanted to call it Cat, but Grandpa told me that Mother would think it showed a lack of imagination and think I had no feelings towards it and had not connected with the animal properly. It couldn't be Cat, then. I made another list. My list of cat names wasn't that long, but I had Googled popular cat names, and these were some I liked. The cat was a boy, so my ideas were for males. Blackie, but only if it was a black cat. Whiskers, the second most popular name for a cat. Richmond, but I had thought of this before what happened in the park, so I crossed it out. Staverton, Grandpa's suggestion. I don't like it, and it would remind me of Grandpa, so I crossed it out. Bob, because it's short, and for a boy. Kitty, because it's short for cat, but it sounds like a girl, because I knew a girl called Kitty, so I crossed it out too. After my usual morning free time, I sat looking out of the window, until I saw Grandpa's car pull up outside. He looked up and signalled for me to come downstairs. I could see that my mother was in the front seat, and that was another new thing, because they didn't usually come together. I reminded myself that this was just one day, for the kitten, and not another change to my list. The day ahead had already gone out of my routine and was close to completely ruined, so I concentrated on getting this over with and seeing what happened. I slowly stood up and walked towards the door, where I exchanged my slippers for my outside shoes. Adidas, my favourite shoe brand. I liked the stripes on the side. I looked at the time in the hall. It was 10:10. Good. Plenty of time until lunch. And if Grandpa left quickly, I could just try and do the exercises I should have done on Wednesday, but was too tired. Then I could just ignore the cat and watch television later. I was trying to stay fit inside the flat now. On the way down the stairs, I took a decision, and decided to call the cat Tabby, because I would remember it. And the cat turned out to be even stripier than I thought when I saw it, which was good. The name was a good choice.
"Morning, Nick," said Grandpa, in his chirpiest voice.
I had asked him once why he sounded like that sometimes, very bouncy and loud, and he said,
"Feeling chirpy, Nick,"
which isn't even a thing. And I said, "Morning," back, and stood away from the basket. My Grandpa looked at me. I looked at the pavement. My mother got out of the car, looking worried. I knew that look, and she said,
"Hello, Nick. This is exciting. I hope the kitten keeps you company."
I didn't want to look as though I was panicking, so I did my practice smile and just said, "Yes." Everyone was quiet for a minute, and I tried not to worry about Grandpa coming inside. Mother was there, and he didn't correct me when she was close by, but I had a kitten to get used to. I wanted a short visit. Grandpa spoke to me.
"Give us a hand. I have to say, I never realized a little animal would need this much gear."
I tried to explain about the list and the research so that Mother would be impressed, but Grandpa was looking at the pile of things on the floor.
"Yes, I know, Nick. I was only joking. I forgot you had a humour bypass. Do you want to take the stuff or the kitten?"
"The stuff." We carried everything up the stairs, and my mother followed, and as I went through the hall, I saw it was 10:45. My note was still up. I stopped. Mother, look at my note. I am looking for a job.
Nick, I'm so proud of you. Well done. Let us know if you find one.
We got the kitten into the flat, and Grandpa put its carrying basket on the floor and undid the leather straps. We waited, and after a bit the little animal came out. It was really small, and as its head emerged, it made a little sound as if to say, "Help!" But it was just a squeak, not a word. I wasn't sure what the right thing to do for a small kitten was, but it stopped outside the cage, looking at the floor, and began scratching at the carpet with claws that looked very sharp, before Grandpa scooped it up in one hand and held it out.
"Here you go. Hold him."
I hadn't realized you had to hold them. It hadn't been on the list or on the website, and I didn't feel at all like having it in my hand now that I had seen how its claws had made runs in the carpet.
"Come on, he's yours. You can't just stare at him."
Grandpa held the cat in his palm while I tried to pluck up the courage to take it.
"He might scratch me."
Mother frowned at Grandpa and smiled at me. I knew she was trying to make me feel better, but smiling doesn't make someone who doesn't want to hold a cat feel like they want to hold it. I concentrated. There would be no point in going to all this trouble if I couldn't do what everyone else did with their cats. Grandpa doesn't like people who don't make up their minds, or who are babies, or won't do what they are told, so just as I was going to hold out my hand, he picked the cat up into the air and put it on me, and it clung on to my jumper. And then, while I was concentrating on not waving my arms or flicking it off, it lay down on the bend of my elbow. I looked down at him, and little dark blue eyes stared at me. It weighed nothing, and it smelt cleaner than I had thought it would. I knew my grandpa was watching, so I stayed still and tried not to think about germs.
"He's nice," I said finally. "Yeah, he's sweet. What's his name?"
"It's Tabby, because he's a tabby. I found it on the computer."
"It suits him. Let's get him sorted."
Grandpa unpacked his bed, and I unpacked the bowls and the litter tray, and Mother made cups of tea for me and her, and wiped down the side with Dettol spray. I felt as if everything was going well. Perhaps this cat was a good idea after all. I sat on the chair, and the kitten climbed down off my arm, and I drank my tea, and the kitten went to sleep, on the floor, not even on the bed Grandpa had got for it to sleep on. I asked Grandpa to move it, but he told me it could sleep anywhere it wanted, and laughed. But it wasn't a nice laugh. If it could sleep anywhere, then what was the point of the bed? I decided I could try and move it later. Grandpa filled up the tray with grey grit and left the scoop next to it. It could be outside the bathroom. I didn't think the germs could get to the kitchen from there. We watched Holmes Under the Hammer together. Well, Mother was watching me and Grandpa, and we were watching the programme. Then we had a sandwich, which was chicken and avocado and brown bread, and baked crisps and a juice. Tabby was quiet and seemed quite easy to live with, so I relaxed a little bit and thought my day might be all right.
"We have to go, Nick. Leave you two to get acquainted. Places to go, people to see. You look white as a fucking sheet, Nick. You eating? You're very pasty, like I said before. I think you need to get some colour in your cheeks."
"Leave him alone, Dad. Look, on his list it says he goes to the park on Tuesdays."
I wanted to explain that I wouldn't be going there again, and about getting sun through my window, but I decided to be quiet. The cat was enough for one day. I would just tell them I was going to go out.
"It's all right. I will go for a walk tomorrow. I'll get fresh air." "All right, then. Just pay attention to the cat. You know, stroke it."
I felt upset when I heard Grandpa say that. I looked back at the kitten. I wanted to move it onto its sleeping cushion. I felt uneasy until the door closed behind them. Mother gave me a smile and said she would see me next week. Grandpa gave me a wink, which I hated. I sat still for a bit. The kitten didn't move, and I didn't really want to wake it. Eventually, I had to go to the bathroom, and when I came back, the kitten was stretching. I decided to get my routine back on track, so I pulled the bin bag out of the bin and tied it up. I put my left trainer on, ready to go outside, and then went to put my right one on. As I picked it up off the floor, I could smell something bad. The kitten hadn't used the litter tray. It had made a mess on the floor next to my shoe. I threw the shoe away across the room and put my hand over my mouth and nose and opened the window. I pulled off my other shoe, laces still done up, which you are not supposed to do, and ran to the sink and scrubbed my hands until they were sore. I put on my washing-up gloves, trying to ignore the stink in the room, which was overwhelming me. Tabby had only just arrived, and so far I had stared at it for 3 hours while it slept, and now I had a flat that stank, and I had to somehow get rid of the mess on the floor. I filled up a bowl with water and washing-up liquid and carpet cleaner like Mother had done once when my brother was sick on the carpet, and got out my cleaning wipes and some toilet paper. I picked up what I could and dropped it into the toilet, gagging, then took a cloth and rubbed and rubbed, then put bleach where it had been, then more water, then more bleach. The carpet looked paler, but the smell was less. I would have to throw my shoes away. You can't have one shoe, and the one which was close to the mess must be covered in germs. I undid the bag, and with the gloves on, I picked up the trainers one at a time and put them into the half-filled rubbish bag that I had been about to take down. My heart was pounding so hard, I thought I would faint. Last of all, I put the gloves I had used in, too. In my socks, I went downstairs, retied the bag neatly, and laid it on top of the bin, trying to be calm, and I tried to breathe slowly. As soon as I went upstairs and opened my door, the smell hit me. It hadn't gone, and I got out the air freshening spray and sprayed everywhere. I sat on the sofa and tried to think, how could one little animal make everything such a mess and put a whole life's routine out this much? No sooner had I sat down, Tabby started to jump up on my leg. It had its claws out, and it hurt a bit. They were very sharp. I told it to stop, calmly, and asked it to get down, but it didn't seem to hear, and I was panicked now. How was I supposed to control it if it wouldn't take simple instructions? Just as I was about to call Cat Protection for advice, it landed on my lap. This meant I was completely stuck, and I sat there, rigid, while the kitten pushed into me and put its claws in and out, and made a noise like a mobile phone vibrating. This was not relaxing. I sat rigid, held prisoner, and I couldn't even turn the light on or get a glass of water, and I had only had two today, so I could get dehydrated. I tried to lift it off, but it was attached by its claws. I didn't like cats. When Tabby eventually woke up, it was nearly 5 o'clock. The sun had gone round the other side of the building, and I hadn't turned the light on. The cat had wasted my whole day, and now it jumped down, as if it had lived in my flat all its life, and started meowing really loudly for such a tiny body. I had seen cats do that on TV, and they always wanted food, so I prepped its food carefully, with my hand over my mouth as I dug it out of the tin. It stank of old fish guts, and I tried not to be sick in my mouth. I kept my yellow rubber gloves on so at least my hands wouldn't get contaminated. I also filled its water bowl while it ate. When it had finished the whole tin, it repeated the pooing of earlier, this time in the litter tray, which smelt just as bad, and I had to empty that, and although I thought about putting it in the toilet, like Grandpa said, I decided to get another bin bag and go downstairs again. I didn't want to share a toilet with an animal. By the time I got upstairs, it was asleep again. I was exhausted, and happy that I didn't have to worry now it was sleeping. I decided not to put the television on in case it woke it up. sleeping cat was the least trouble, and I decided I liked it best like that. I needed to achieve something other than looking after the cat today, so I sat down to continue my research. There was something comforting about being back on my chair, in front of the computer. I could forget about the cat and try and breathe calmly. It would have been better if I could have looked out through the window and watched the world go by, but most of the light was gone now, and I had missed the quiet time of the day. Watching people in the rush hour made me anxious, nothing but running for buses or horns blaring. This was another disturbing day. I started to itch, but I stared at the screen and slowly calmed down. Just as I found a really helpful website, the phone rang. It made me jump, and I then looked over at Tabby in case he woke up. He didn't. It was probably Mother wanting to find out how things were going with the cat. I left it, but it was stressful letting a phone ring. It stopped after 15 rings, and I sat for a moment, then did my centering exercise and breathing, checked the kitten was still asleep, and walked to the kitchen to prepare something to eat. I would make pancakes. White ones. That always soothed me. I loved mixing the milk into the powder, and I loved the taste. The smell from the kitten was in the kitchen area as well, and I started to worry that there could be germs in the air. I washed my hands and the bowl for the pancakes and the spoon in very hot water with soap. Then I washed the frying pan. Then I made the pancakes. I got them to the table and sat down. Better. Just as I was lifting the fork to my lips, the phone started ringing again. That was twice in 15 minutes. I didn't want to speak to my mother, and I didn't pick up. I could be busy with the kitten, or outside at the bins. Mother knew I hated being rung over and over again, and she never usually did it. I had strategies. I had learned them at school, and I knew I had too much stress on me at the moment. Whoever would get a cat to relax them, I had no idea. I was doing everything right, trying not to panic, but then the phone started ringing again. This time the persistent ringtone carried on echoing through my brain even after it stopped, and I couldn't even sit still. My hands were waving around, and I twisted up against the frustration of it all. 15 rings. It was like torture. Surely Mother should know that. Ring, ring. It started again, and it felt unbearable. My elbows were really itching now, and the little bumps on my arms felt enormous. I could be developing stress hives. My blood pressure was probably very high. I thought if Mother was ringing this often, perhaps it was an emergency. Grandpa could be dead, which might mean I would never be a proper man because he hadn't finished showing me everything. But I did think I might be calmer if he wasn't visiting. I couldn't think of any other emergencies that would need this many phone calls. I covered my ears with my hands. It had to stop now. It was driving me mad. From behind me, I heard a meow. I walked over to the phone, and for a moment, I considered smashing it on the wall, but I knew that would upset Mother, so I didn't. Usually I was coping. I was coping just fine. I picked up the phone, and I listened. Nothing. I waited, and then said, "Hello?" A voice I had never heard said hello back, and before I could say wrong number, I heard my name. The day was getting worse and worse, and I listened to see what they were ringing to say, on my tiptoes in my smelly flat.
"Is that Nick?"
"Yes, this is Nick."
"Hi, this is Karen Watson, your neighbour from upstairs."
I knew I was supposed to say something, but I didn't. I had never had a day like this, never. Mother said to me sometimes, "I am speechless." I knew what she meant, and felt myself backing up until the wall was behind me. I leant on it.
"I saw your note. Downstairs?"
She paused. I said nothing, trying to work out what she meant, and then I realized I had put up a note. It was my note. I couldn't deal with this today, but I tried to be polite. It was on my list.
Yes. You're looking for work, and I might be able to help. I work at University Hospital, and some of my colleagues in the mortuary are looking for an assistant.
I wanted this conversation to end. I waited, but she wasn't going away.
What do you think?
Her voice was a bit sharp, like my mother when she was talking to Grandpa. I leant harder against the wall. I don't know.
Don't worry. If you're at home, I could drop by and tell you more about it.
I can't. I have a lot on. I've just got a cat.
That's nice. Are you still looking for work, though?
I wanted to say no, but for some reason I said yes, because it would be wrong to lie. I can keep secrets. Grandpa had taught me that was all right, and sometimes it was the right thing to do for your own good. But I can't lie. I tried to think of a way to get her not to come, but she was talking all by herself, and the end of what she said was that she was coming to my flat. I put the handset down and sat down on the sofa next to the cat. I felt like passing out. The room was blurry from me nearly crying. It was a mess. There were things everywhere, and I didn't know where they belonged. I needed help. The cat seemed to want things from me that I didn't enjoy. There might be something wrong with it, as I hadn't read anything anywhere about cats being this demanding. It tapped me with its paws and scratched the sofa and started to walk around sniffing the air curiously. It started running as if it was chasing something across the floor, but nothing was there. It even chased its own tail. It didn't listen to any instructions to stop or slow down, and in between the running it would lie down for a little while and do the mobile phone noise. It was crazy and full of energy. It ran around everywhere, pulling, pushing, making noises and making me feel out of control. Then it pooed again, in the tray. The flat smell was enough to put me off fish forever. How could one tiny kitten make this much waste? I went to the toilet every morning myself, but this was ridiculous. I grabbed it and put it back in its travel box. Then I took it to the bathroom and closed the door. I couldn't breathe. I put the tray outside the window on the windowsill and closed the window. The flat still smelt of cat and fish. I thought I'd better call Grandpa and tell him how hard I found it. I tried to remember what Mother had said. A kitten is company, a friend, sweet, cute. I hadn't seen any of that yet. I sat back down, put the television on, but in the broken world I had wandered into today, the first thing I saw was a picture of the park and the two people who had been doing disgusting things by the lake. I turned it off, quickly. Sweat was running off me, and the cat was still in its basket in the bathroom. I opened the door and lifted it out, put it next to the wall, and opened the leather straps. That was when I heard a knock on the door. I tried to flatten myself against the wall, tripped over the cat basket, and the pile of books on the shelf above hit the floor with a bang. She knew I was in here. The kitten meowed, and I thought I might scream, something I never did, but which had already happened once this week with Grandpa. I didn't scream, though. Instead, I stood still. My neighbour pushed the letterbox open and shouted in,
"Nick, it's Karen. Your neighbour?"
"It's not a good time at all at the moment."
"Don't worry, I won't keep you. I just wanted to say hi and give you some information about the job. Also, I love kittens."
I thought carefully about what to do. I didn't want Grandpa or Mother to know I wasn't coping, but she didn't know either of them, so she wouldn't tell. She was a doctor, so she wouldn't be lying. She had a job. I needed work. I walked towards the door and slowly pressed the handle up and then down, which is how you open that door. I wiped the sweat off my face, but I only opened the door a little bit to start with, so that I could see her. She looked as grey as ever to me. This time she was drenched from the rain, and she made some remark about how she hated umbrellas. She didn't look me in the eye, which was a relief, and I tried to stick to the list in another way. Make conversation. Umbrellas can be practical, I pointed out. She was taking out a bunch of papers from her Asda bag, which I could see had the University Hospital logo on it. I knew it was their logo because it said the name underneath the curly UH.
So, about this job, when would you be available to start? They are very keen to get someone in as soon as possible.
I thought about it. Then I remembered my mother saying, "One thing at a time, Nick." So I asked her, "Do you want a cat?" This stopped her talking in the middle of her sentence, and she frowned.
"Your new cat? Didn't you say you just got the cat?"
"Yes, but I don't like it. It's under the sofa, but I don't want to get it out because it scratched me earlier. It makes a mess everywhere, and it has too much energy. It's called Tabby. You can have it. I will get it." She laughed, and I didn't. And then she started talking again, but she came into my flat, past me, her coat dripping on the floor and her hair flopping in front of her face. She went into the living room without asking. "You can have all the stuff, the bed, the tray, the food, all of it," I said. "I can have a job, but I can't have a cat and a job, and I think a job is better."
"Don't be silly. Cats are very independent. You can leave Tabby here in the day with some food and his tray. He's probably just nervous. I love cats, but I can't have one. I sometimes work all night at the hospital."
She reached under the sofa and pulled the cat out.
"You aren't really supposed to do that, because kittens can't retract their claws, and they could be ripped out of their paws, which I didn't want to see. But I didn't really care about Tabby, so I didn't tell her that."
Karen sat down on the sofa. I started to put the cat's things into a bag.
"Nick, I can't take the cat. I wish I could. I will ask around and see if I know anyone who wants one. Do you want to hear about the job? It's in the hospital where I work, in a place called the morgue. It's the place where they keep bodies when people die in the hospital or on their way to the hospital. Do you mind dead bodies? Are you scared of them?"
I didn't know why anyone would be scared of dead bodies. Did they have germs? What if they had been ill and you got their illness? "I don't think I am scared of dead bodies. Can you get germs from them?"
"No, Nick, it's sterile. You wash the bodies with surgical gloves on, and it's cold. They are kept in fridges, and it's just a big science lab, really. I just wanted to check, but you will be able to tell really quickly if it is too much for you."
"I think it will be a good job for me if it's clean and in a hospital." I was going to have to find a solution to the cat, but I could think about that when Karen had gone. I just wanted to be on my own. My arms were wrapped round my middle, and I had sweat running down my back. I needed to stay calm, or Karen would think I wasn't coping and change her mind about the job. This was too much pressure.
"How many hours a week do you think you could work, Nick? I could give you a lift in until you are used to it, and they will show you the ropes. It's from 8 until 12:30, Monday to Thursday, to start with, and you can do a week's trial. Would that be good? Just part-time?"
"Part-time. Yes. That's good. I have things to do every day of the week, so that way I could still fit them in." I felt fine every time I thought about the job. It was a big step, but I wanted to do it. It was time for Karen to go now.
"You will be responsible for washing the bodies, preparing them for their families to come and say goodbye, wheeling people down from the wards to the morgue, assisting with autopsies, whatever is needed. I have a job description form here, and you should look it over so you know what you will be doing. I can come back when you have signed this confidentiality form to pick it up, and I'll bring the contract."
I didn't want her to visit every day of the weekend, so I made a decision. "I will sign it now, and I can start on Monday if you want me to.
I just need you to go now and not come back today. I have things to do.
I had said it, out loud, and I picked up the paper, and Karen showed me where to sign, and I signed, and she left. I sat by the window, trying not to look at the dirty cat tray outside in the rain, and tried to think what to do next. I decided to lie on the bed and close my eyes. I tried to make some sense of the last 4 days, but I just felt fear and panic and wanted to run away, from the pictures in my head, from the mess and the smell and the kitten who had now seen that I had moved and climbed up the side of the base, then the mattress with its claws, and started to knead the pillow. It wouldn't leave me alone. I got up and went to the computer. I needed to calm down. I googled pure girls, then clicked images. I had decided not to watch videos ever again. The problem was, for me, that I liked the girls lying in cornfields or on beaches with plaits, but it was hard to resist wanting to see them moving. I was looking at a girl in a gingham dress when suddenly a message popped up between her parted legs, flashing at me. "Do you want to fuck me? I am only 2 miles away." This was the final straw, and I was up on my tiptoes, hands twisted, trying to make it go away. How did she know where I was? How did she know who I was? I banged at the keyboard with my fist and sat back down, desperate now just to stop the images and the flashing sign. Just as I found Control-Alt-Delete, Tabby jumped and attached himself to my leg through my trousers. I tried to pull him off, while the picture of the girl called Meg in her pretty dress carried on asking me the same question. Her perfect little breasts and the skirt which just covered her panties, mixed up with the pain in my leg and my worries about the germs on my trousers. My head was starting to spin, and there were whole sequences of unrelated images playing in my brain that I didn't want there. I realized I was sobbing. The pressure in my head was making the floor vibrate, my eyes pulsating behind my eyelids. Sweat was trickling down my forehead again. I hated sweat, and I needed a shower. It was all because of the cat. It was on a campaign to make my life hell. My nostrils were full of the new smell of the flat. Everything was out of place. There was cat equipment everywhere, strangers were turning up at my door, and my life was on the television. I couldn't cope, and Grandpa would see that next Wednesday and tell Mother, and she would make me move back to her house, and Grandpa would have to correct me then for my own good. I wanted to say it out loud. I can't cope with this cat. But I didn't. Instead, I paced up and down my living room, saying, "Right decisions. I must make them." It was something I had seen on a documentary on BBC Two. It didn't help. The meowing was getting louder. All my ears were getting more sensitive. The cat seemed to have a built-in megaphone. I really, really wanted it to be quiet. I told it to be quiet one last time, then I picked it up to put it in the bathroom for the night. It wasn't the way you are supposed to pick up a cat. I knew that from the website. I picked it up underneath its head and put my thumb on its throat to make it be quiet. It worked. Under the fur, its bones and its neck were tiny, and I could feel gulping as I pressed my thumb in further. I just needed a minute to think. Peace. I sat on the sofa holding Tabby out in front of me, and its little feet jumped around a bit. It was trying to scratch me. Then its neck went click in my fingers, and it went completely still. I picked up its sleeping cushion with the other hand and lay Tabby on it. He was quiet and calm. The rain had stopped, and I watched people and cats coming and going while I sat with my pet, keeping each other company. The phone didn't ring, and no one came to the door. I took off all my clothes and put them in another bin bag. If I kept on going through clothes like this, Mother would not be happy. I would have to get back in control. It was sensible that my clothes all might get worn out at once, though. They were the same age, because she bought them all at the same time.
I left the bin bag of clothes next to the pile of cat equipment, except the litter tray, which I left outside the window for now, and added all the printing I had done on kittens to the bag. I didn't tie it up, because I was going to put Tabby in there before I left in the morning. I went into the bathroom. Then I had a long, hot shower. Tabby was still on his cushion, and I decided I liked him better like this. He was nicer. Perhaps working with dead people wouldn't be such a bad idea. I carried him to the bed and got into my pyjamas and lay in my usual position. I fell asleep next to him, thinking about the job and my still, calm kitten that I now liked very much.
Chapter 6 Karen. I put my heart and my soul into my work, and lost my mind in the process. Vincent van Gogh. Saturday morning. Karen lay in bed and thought about the past few days. She felt satisfied, and as if her normally uneventful life was taking on a new dimension. She had woken up yesterday to the sound of her neighbour closing her flat door, and realised that she had spent the whole night sleeping next to him. That was new. She hadn't had any sort of physical contact with the man for over 2 years, and when she had, it had always been at his place or an anonymous hotel. Now she found herself living under the same roof as a man she had spent the night with, which could make her life more complicated, but at least Charlie couldn't call her a dried-up old spinster and be completely right anymore. Friday had disappeared as she worked out how best to incorporate Nick into her study. She had worked from home, not even getting dressed, and now she had a plan. It might be Saturday, but there would be someone at the hospital morgue, there always was. People didn't die on schedule, and she wanted to take Nick's forms there as quickly as she could before they gave the job to someone else. This was so much more exciting than her night with Tam, as she had discovered her nighttime companion was called. Nick could be the guinea pig she had been searching for to complete her thesis. Diagnostically, as far as she could tell so far, he sat exactly on the line between functional and non-contributory, and Karen's passion was to get those individuals into society, working, studying, living a useful life. She jumped out of bed, showered, and dressed. Nick's forms were in her handbag, and she was filled with a new sense of purpose. At the bottom of the Asda carrier she always used to transport work papers, she had a little stub of lipstick that had absorbed tissue and crumbs. But now she stood in front of the mirror, dipped her little finger into it, and smeared it onto her lips and her cheeks. She would feel a little bit better if she saw Tam on the way out now. She decided not to tie her hair up. It looked wild, and she shook her head gently. A little woolly and streaked with grey, but, she thought, less severe. She headed downstairs with a hint of a smile on her face. She would show everyone. She would be vindicated, and Nick would be the catalyst of her redemption. She could see Charlie's face when he had to apologise, and her children congratulating her, while Nick worked happily and successfully at a job that he would never have got without her, and she won the respect of family and friends with her brilliant thesis and important work. One flight of stairs down, and she passed Nick's door, hesitated, then knocked.
Nick?
There was no answer from inside, not even the faint meowing of the kitten. He must have popped out. She needed to make firm arrangements for Monday. Perhaps they could go in together, once she had retrieved her car and filled it with petrol. She felt slightly more benevolent towards the human race this morning. Although she understood that what she had shared with Tam was purely a one-night stand, for some reason she still felt less judgmental towards the shortcomings of others. Perhaps it was the release of sexual tension. She must remember how useful it was going forward. She opened the front door, and her mood descended from what were the heights of joy for Karen to instant misery. Her ex-husband was standing outside, leaning against her car, arms crossed, and an expression on his face which slowed Karen's pace almost into reverse. She was still 5 feet from him when he shouted, "What the fuck is wrong with you?" Even through the shakiness which his fury always induced in her, she retained a little of the earlier unusual cheer.
"Nothing is wrong with me. What do you mean?"
You think nothing's wrong with you? Do you know your children's names? Do you have any fucking idea what is going on in their lives? Jack walked off the football pitch halfway through his game this morning. Apparently you promised to come and watch his social side, having already failed to get the forms in for the school club. He looked out for you when he scored a goal, and when you still weren't there, he legged it. You're a joke. The great scientist. You should stop doing experiments on strangers and start looking at what's under your nose. You're damaging your children while trying to fix people who probably had mothers just like you. You're pathetic. Sarah told me your last words were, "See you at the weekend, at football, I promise." Nice touch, the promise. Kids tend to believe those, even from absent parents.
Karen remembered now. She had got so caught up with the possibilities for Nick and her unexpected night of lust that it had gone out of her head. She stood, head down, trying to think how to explain. The images of her children congratulating her on academic success were receding fast. From round the corner, Karen heard rustling. She hadn't realized it, but she had started crying, and her nose was running. She grubbed around in her bag for a tissue, and by the time she had found a crumpled one that had seen better days, Nick had appeared in front of her. He must have been at the bins. She had seen him before on a Saturday, wiping them down and putting them straight after the bin men had been on a Friday. Now he stood in front of her, looking agitated and stepping first to her left and then to her right. Karen realized it was because she was blocking the doorway.
"Sorry, Nick."
She stood to one side and blew her nose, then started dabbing at her eyes. The remnants of the lipstick she had smeared on 10 minutes before were on the tissue.
"So who the fuck is this, then? Very cozy. And since when did you wear lipstick to work?"
Nick was hurrying towards the door.
"Are you her boyfriend? She likes guys who can't step on the cracks in the path. You're right up her street. Did she mention she had 3 kids and an ex-husband?"
Nick was standing on the step in front of the door with his hands clamped over his ears. His key had fallen onto the paving stones below, and he didn't have a free hand to pick it up with. Karen turned and unlocked the door for him, handing him back his key, which he took after he'd pulled his jacket sleeve down to cover his hand. Karen understood. Germs. When he was safely inside, Karen turned back to her ex-husband.
"Typical of you to pick on someone vulnerable. Don't you understand? My work is vitally important. I'm trying to help a vast swathe of misdiagnosed people with my research. There is an epidemic out there of illnesses which are being put under the all-encompassing umbrella of autism, and there are a huge number of permutations and symptoms that haven't even been classified yet. There are hundreds of thousands of people, students, mathematicians, being lost to society once they are labelled autistic. Do you understand that some of the great minds of history would be classified as autistic today? Albert Einstein, Michelangelo, Mozart, Hans Christian Andersen? They would all be considered on the spectrum, and probably drugged up to the eyeballs on antipsychotics or playing endless computer games. Don't you understand that sacrifices are necessary to rectify that? I work as hard as I do to make life better for millions of people. I'm proud of that. What am I supposed to have done wrong? Not told the kids a bedtime story? I was working. I made sure they got to school. I fed them. Just leave me alone."
It was the first time Karen had ever tried to explain to her husband what she felt or what she was trying to achieve. For a moment it seemed to have helped, as he was silent. Her relief at being able to put into words the rationale for the long hours in front of her computer, the weeks of research, to express the reasons behind it, gave her courage, and she stood, momentarily defiant, and waited.
"Have you ever heard of balance, you stupid, stupid woman?"
Charlie was shouting now, and from the window on the first floor, Karen heard a high-pitched screeching noise, which she knew instinctively was coming from Nick's flat.
"Karen, you have children. You have responsibilities. Don't you understand that? Play God all you want. Cure the whole fucking human race. But has it occurred to you that for someone with so many letters after their name, you're incapable of making anyone happy? Even yourself?"
Karen was frozen now, as the tirade got nastier and nastier, and her husband got closer and closer. He was almost on top of her now, flecks of white spit on his lips, and he was so close she had to bend her neck to look up at him, like a snake hypnotized by a mongoose.
Look at the state of you. Look in the mirror. You're a fucking embarrassment. The best thing for everyone concerned would be if you just disappeared. You're a frigid, ugly old bitch with ice for a soul, and I wish I'd never met you.
Karen sensed Tam before she saw him, and shame filled her. He walked up the path in her peripheral vision while Charlie carried on shouting, oblivious to the approaching newcomer.
"Excuse me," Tam said, putting down his shopping on the path.
"Just go round us, mate, we're talking here."
"Yes, I caught some of it. Karen, are you all right? Can I help?"
"What the fuck is going on in this house?" shouted Charlie. "It's very cozy all of a sudden. Why would you be able to help? Just mind your own business and fuck off."
"I think abusive men are my business."
Tam's arm was between them now, and this intervention broke the lock between her and the father of her children, the man she supposed she must have loved when she was 20 and they had first got together, and who still had the power to make her doubt everything about her choices. She dropped her shoulders, and her whole body felt weak, as if it was about to crumple into a ball.
"This isn't over, you stupid cunt. I need some backup with the kids. I'm drowning. Email me a schedule and stick to it, and turn up for parents' evening next week. You're supposed to be an academic, even if you've never published an original thought in your life."
Another wail came from inside the house, followed by repetitive banging.
"That's enough," said Tam. "Karen, come inside."
As she turned towards the door, something hit her hard in the back, then landed at her feet. Car keys.
"I sorted the car out for you too, as you seem to be the only member of the human race who can't put petrol into a tank. It was sitting on the pavement on my route to work all week collecting tickets, and I couldn't drive past it one more time. You're lucky if it didn't tow it away. How have you been getting to work? Cabs, don't tell me. Can't pay for Jack's football club, but you can go backwards and forwards to the hospital in a taxi. Don't worry about the money for filling it up, or the tickets. I'll pay those as well, shall I? Fucking stupid bitch!"
Charlie carried on as Karen let Tam lead her through the hall and to the door of his flat. He sat her on his sofa and made her a cup of sweet tea. She was going to explain how bad sugar was for you, what it did to your pancreas, but she stopped herself. She sipped her tea, and then for the second time that morning, she started to cry.
"I think I should go and check on Nick. I was talking to him about a job, and..."
She trailed off. Tam was standing in front of her, holding out his hand and pointing at his ceiling.
"Silence is golden. You can go later," he said, as he pulled her towards him and kissed her.
Karen was lying on her back in Tam's bed. She couldn't see Tam's head. It was under the sheets, between her legs. She couldn't respond enough to be stressed about the intermittent buzzing from her phone, in her bag by the door. She was a pool of molten jelly, quivering like agar without a thought in her head. And when he lifted himself up in one smooth movement and pushed into her, his mouth closed over her moaning one as she came, and she couldn't even hear the renewed banging on the ceiling above them. Later, Karen had lost all sense of how much later, reality returned to her, this time in the form of a cup of coffee. Tam brought it to her, or what was left of her, spread-eagled across his bed with no worries about modesty or where she should be. She seemed to have lost direction completely. She sat up and shook her head briskly. She looked at Tam, who was staring at her with a huge grin on his face.
"You're full of surprises. That is the best time I've had in bed for years."
Karen opened her mouth to speak, but he interrupted her.
"Drink your coffee. It's a Saturday, and you're all mine. Nowhere to go at the weekend. Or do you just ignore those conventions too?"
Karen remembered then, about Nick, and the morgue, and the job.
"Oh, God, can you hand me my phone, please?"
Tam walked over to the door and dug into her bag, took out the ancient Nokia and handed it over.
"A message from Jack, one from Sarah, and one from Pete in the morgue saying he'll be there till 2. Oh, and 2 from Charlie, my ex-husband. You met him earlier."
"What's the story there?
He looks like a real charmer. What was he so upset about?
Karen hated talking about her.